Hey guys, it's Dallas from the Goodish Girls. Do you have a copy of A Fate Fortune Fire yet? You can grab your copy today right in our Amazon store. We dropped a link in the show notes just for you. We hope you enjoyed this book and this interview with the wonderful Hazel McBride.
All right, welcome to the Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
I'm Melissa.
And today we have the wonderful Hazel McBride, who is the author of A Fate Forged in Fire. Woo! Welcome!
Yay! Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can't believe you're here. This is so exciting. Thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule. I see you on social media and you are go, go, go all the time, writing and touring and doing all the things. So thank you again for being here with us today.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I mean, I feel like I've been back in my writing cave for a few weeks. Well, I went to London last week. That was like a break from the writing cave.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like I venture out for a couple of weeks and then I crawl back in. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna live here for a few weeks. Please, no one talk to me.
Yes, and then, the door's closed.
Yeah, and then a very full-on like week in London and then back. But, you know, I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm glad that you're in there writing so that we can have more Fate Forged in Fire books.
I actually just had a call with my agent this morning about recontracting for Duology 2.
Yay! So
we'll see. Ooh.
I cannot wait. We talked in our episodes about like who the – just guessing and speculating who the duologies are going to be about and where they're going to be in. So I am excited to find out eventually. So I do kind of want to start in the beginning as far as like inspiration for this series. The series is a little bit different than what we're normally used to reading because I think we can relate to it a lot with like real world issues. Mm. And it's very interesting to have like a matriarchy instead of like a patriarchy, like right, like in our modern world. So how long was this story in your mind? Did it live in there for years? How long have you been trying to get this on paper?
Honestly, it came together very quickly. I think it was the end of 2022, beginning of 2023, where I was kind of, you know, I love shows like Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon. I've always loved dragon books like Aragorn, The Inheritance Cycle, even like Smaug from The Hobbit. There's just always been something about dragons. And then I thought to myself, you know, a lot of fantasy books or even romantasy books often have like a female protagonist who is the one person who's able to rule, but then the general environment is typically still patriarchal. And it was when I was watching the House of the Dragon series, and obviously that's a succession war between a woman and a man, and you know the man is kind of the default. And I just thought to myself, what if I could write somewhere where the woman was the default? Like, what would that look like? And how would that be different? And how would that change the story? And it was around about that time I also went home on holiday to Scotland, which is where I'm from, for anyone who's clocked my now very faint accent. And I was going up around the Highlands with my husband, and I got a lot of inspiration there for like what the world of Arasosha would look like. So I world built first. That took about 2 months. Put together a massive document with all the territories, all the clans, you know, what they eat, what they wear, the trade routes. You know, it's a bit ridiculous, but necessary. And then after that, I'm very much a pantser. So I write by the seat of my pants. I don't really plot too much. Like the story's in my head and I just word vomit it onto a page. And, you know, even if I plot, I usually end up changing things by the end as like ideas come to me. And I think the first draft was written in a about 4 weeks, which is very fast.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, my agent had reached out prior to ask if I was working on anything original. And at that point, I think I had like 3 chapters. And then she just said, okay, go away and write the manuscript and then we'll chat. So naturally, I was like, I must write this as quickly as possible. then said, before she loses interest and I lose my shot at this, which wouldn't have happened. But yeah, sent it back to her. She liked it. And then I signed with her and the rest is history.
That's fabulous. What a way for everything to fall into place just at the right time.
Yeah, very much so.
So now that the first book is done, I want to add this question. Is are you able to take a little bit more time with the next book in the next series now that you know that it's not like a super race of losing it if you don't get it there quick enough, kind of like you were worried about in the beginning?
Oh no, I have this compulsion to like get these stories out of my head. I think because there's so many.
Yeah.
So book two is with my editors already, which is kind of normal. I mean, it's coming out next May, so that's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. I might be like a couple of months ahead, but that's nothing crazy. Book three has already been with my agent because we're about to hopefully recontract, which mm-hmm. means we're about to send the next, I say book three, it's not really book three, it's the first book of the next duology, so it's a different story. That's about to be sent to my publishers UK US side to mm-hmm. see if they want to contract again for it, which is always a little bit scary. Nothing's ever guaranteed. Like, I think we're in a very good place, but again, nothing's guaranteed. So I'm like, I hope they like what I've written. I hope they like this new story.
Yeah, I feel like it's fair I feel like it's fair to be nervous about that kind of stuff. I'm sure they're going to love it. I have no doubt in my mind that they are going to love it. And that is, if I'm correct, that is the same world, but a new territory, right? Each duology is going to cover a different territory. So that way, when you're done, you have the entire map in your books.
Exactly. So duology one is in Chirachena, which is fire territory, and duology two is going to take place in Chirar, which is air territory. So we're going to explore griffins and pegasi and all the
magical
things.
Creature out there. Oh, we called it in our episodes. Alyssa and I were like, I bet you, because there's different magic powers, they're going to be one for each. Oh, amazing. I love when our theories come to life. That's awesome. Another question I had was, did you find it difficult to write this book as a woman, knowing what our real world is dealing with on a daily basis? Because there are some scenes in that book that the one towards the end specifically that I, as a woman, I was in my car and I got full body chills. I got goosebumps. I was angry for her. And how was writing those kind of scenes?
I think for me as an author, it's easier to write than it is for a reader to either, you know, listen via the audiobook or read it on a page, because I know where it's going. So even if I'm writing, you know, like harrowing things that are happening to my characters, I'm still in control. Mm-hmm. And the reader obviously isn't. Like, they're just like putting their trust in the author and going along with the story. So I feel like for readers it can be a little bit more like, oh god, I don't know what's going to happen, I don't know if I mm-hmm. like this, whereas for me I'm like, oh god, this is not great, but I know where we're going, kind of thing. And one thing I will say is that even though there are a few shocking scenes in it, nothing was in there for shock value,
right?
You know, when you're talking about real world issues that are facing women in our reality, yes, it fueled so much of the writing of the manuscript, especially because I was approaching it from writing a matriarchy. So it's mm-hmm. it's slightly different, because the women in my world are kind of, this is the first time that men have said these things to them, or men have had the audacity to do these things, and they're like, why? This doesn't make any sense. Like, why mm-hmm. would you do this? Yeah. And they're still angry about it, obviously, but from a bit of a different standpoint to what we are in our reality at the moment, where we're mm-hmm. like, we fought very hard for these rights and now they're being taken away again. Can we mm-hmm. not, please? Yeah. And I think it's really sad that obviously this manuscript was written in 2023, and it's now 2025 and it's only getting more relevant.
Exactly.
Which is quite scary. But yeah, it was definitely a case of, you know, every time I saw something on the news or experienced something in my life, and I was like, well, that's going in the book, because
I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, like, it was very cathartic as well to then write about Emira being able to actually pick up a sword and do something about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm hoping that anyone who reads the book can take, especially women, can take a little bit of strength from that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Emira is not your typical FMC by any means. Mm-mm. She is tall, she is curvy, she is strong, she's a big beautiful redhead, like mm-hmm. she is everything that you would never expect. And during like that one scene, I was waiting for Viri to come in, and if we have put this in our episodes. If I say any of the names wrong, I'm so sorry. Alyssa and I study them and listen to them, and we're doing our very best. But if they're wrong, I'm so sorry.
It's totally fine. I used a lot of Scottish Gaelic in the manuscript, so I'm not expecting readers to, you know, be able to pronounce them properly. I certainly couldn't when I started researching. But, you know, it was my job as an author to provide the pronunciation guide. The audio file is available on my website permanently if anyone wants to listen to it for free. And obviously our audiobook narrator, Samara, was incredible. I need to thank as well Lauren, the Gaelic proofreader, who, like, schooled all of us on this is how you say it right. So yeah, it was my duty to do that as an author, and then readers, just give it your best shot.
Yeah, you did a great job. We have all the tools at our disposal, and your audiobook narrator did a fantastic job.
She's amazing.
It was wonderful, and it really kind of took you into, with her accent, it took her you into the world that you were trying to put us in, which really helped. Mm-hmm. So, and there was times where I had to rewind it and then listen to it. I was like, okay, got the word now. I think I've got the pronunciation now. So thank you for that.
It was so important to me to have a Scottish audiobook narrator. And I remember being a little worried emailing my US publisher being like, can we please have like a Scottish narrator?
Yeah.
Because I was a bit worried, like, okay, it is a different accent, you know, not everyone can understand it, but Samara is just utter perfection. Like, she is so unbelievably talented, and you know, the US were so on board. Like, they didn't even have any pushback. They were like, no, this makes sense, absolutely, it should be a Scottish narrator. So
yeah,
I'm so happy we got her.
When you were listening to, like, was there samples that you received from a couple different ones, or was she like, this is who we want you to have, she's perfect, we know it?
Yeah, so it was last Christmas. So the book came out in May, and I got a few auditions. I think it was 4 total from voice actors who had auditioned for it. We always knew it was going to be female single voice. So there were no conversations about, oh, are we going to have like someone for Fiorian or anything like that. So I listened to 4 different women. We narrowed it down to 2 who were great, but it was the way Samara narrated Padraic and Lachlan that for me, I was like, she just nailed, like, as a woman, it's difficult to narrate an older man and a young boy.
Yeah.
And she did it so well, and I was like, yeah, it has to be her. Like, she'll nail, if she can get this, she'll nail the rest of the book.
Yeah, it was a perfect choice. Honestly, she did a wonderful job. Do you, and you may or may not be able to answer this question, will you have the same audiobook narrator for all of the duologies, or do you think it will be a different one for the next duology because it's not necessarily going to follow Amira and like the original FMC story?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to it. I mean, if Samara wants to keep doing it, I am very happy to keep her. Another thing that really drew me to her is that she has a wide range of accents in her repertoire. Even though Duology 1 is very steeped in Scottish culture, the whole world is really, but it varies slightly depending on region. So I went kind of quite far back in Scotland's history. And if you look at the way Scotland is as an island in the north, you have a lot of Viking history up there from where the Vikings landed. You have the Gaels and you have the Picts. So even, and they kind of made Scotland what it is. So even though Tír Chéanna, where Duology 1 takes place, is very obviously Scottish, every other territory will also have a lot of Scottish elements, but maybe in a slightly different way. And I think Samara is more than capable of, you know, adapting accents and everything to be able to bring those characters and stories to life as well. So if she wants to do it, I'm more than happy for her to continue.
Yeah. Well, Samara, if you're listening at all ever, we vote for you. Please come back.
10 out of 10.
We love you. Oh, that's so exciting. And I also kind of want to talk about the world building. I'm a big map girly. With you, it's a beautiful map. I love it very much. With that, did you design that all on your own? Did you collaborate with somebody? How did building that map and bringing that world to the paper, like, it picture-wise go?
Yeah, so when I was starting off with the world building document, that's the first thing I did, was the map. And I did it on a website called Incarnate, which allows you to create, I think a lot of like Dungeons and Dragons players sometimes use it to like see the worlds and kind of build some stuff up. And it wasn't particularly good. I'm not a very artistic person, but it was enough for me to know, okay, where are all the capital cities? Like what kind of weather is going on? How long is it going to take them to go on horseback or on dragonback or on foot and et cetera. It just helped me visualize the world. And then I gave that terrible digital sketch to the map designer, Dewey Hargreaves, who did a spectacular job in bringing the map to life. And I've actually just commissioned him to do the family tree for book two.
Ooh, that's so exciting.
We're going to get the family tree of the Dyrkathian clan and of the dragons at the front of book two.
That was going to be my other question. On it. I was like, are the dragon family included in there?
Yes.
Oh, yay. Oh, that's going to be so good.
I mean, the dragons are a little bit less linear because obviously they lay eggs and eggs hatch when they hatch. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more all over the place. But, you know, I think he can make sense of all of my compiled notes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, if he did it even half a good a job as he did for the map, it's gonna be great
for sure.
I am very excited to see that. Maybe we'll get like a sneak peek later on in time.
Maybe,
I don't know. Keep a lookout on her socials, guys. She might drop something, I don't know. And then the same question kind of goes for like the characters and the places and the names. I know you said you did a lot of research and some like traveling for that. Did you, like, at least for Amira's name and, like, Fjorian, did you have those kind of, when you first heard them or first thought of them, you were like, yes, this is the ones? Or did you kind of go back and forth between different names for all of these characters? Because they're all very unique names.
Yeah, so I had, the first name I had for the story was actually one of the dragon's names. For anyone who hasn't read the book yet, this might be a minor spoiler, but it's been out for a few months now, so I'm going to talk about it. And I knew I wanted the dragon to be the terror. Like, I wanted people to refer to the dragon as that. I was on a plane, actually. I can't remember where I was flying to, but I looked out the window and I was, like, imagining being on a dragon instead of being on a plane.
As we all do.
I was like, that would be way safer. And thought about this terrifying black dragon, and I was like, oh, it would be like really interesting if the people didn't have a name for it because it has never been bonded before, but they just called it the Terror because of, you know, it was terrifying. And then immediately my brain just went, oh, Terreia, like that should be the dragon's name, like Terror Terreia, and that just immediately popped into my mind. Emira was very similar, which is funny because someone told me that, I can't remember what language it was, I think it was an Arabic language, or it could have been Arabic, that apparently Amira or Amira means princess. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's fitting.
Yeah, sure is.
And then Fjorian is what I would imagine like the male version of Fiona to be. And Fiona is a very, very Scottish name. And to me, it just fit. It was very different to like any other name in a fantasy book I'd heard before. And I was like, yeah, I'll take that. I like that.
No, I agree. Yeah, they're both great names. I think they're very fitting. So I love that there's like a little backstory to them. And then for the dragon names, are we meeting? And again, you don't have to say, spoiler. Are there new dragon names that we will be maybe introduced to in the second half of like this, the second part of the duology, or maybe in the other duologies as well? Or are there other dragon names that you had originally thought of that you ultimately decided not to use?
Well, there's going to be a lot in that family tree because the history of the world that I have goes 200 years prior to when our story starts. So I started off with like Emira's ancestors and all of the dragons that kind of came before. Like the three dragons that came back from the 50-year war, which was 200 years ago, is what I started with. So there are a lot of dragon names. Some of them are direct translations from Scottish Gaelic. Like Avain is river. That's one of the dragon's names. But for instance, like Ervor Colraeth is made up. That's just, they're just names that sound a bit Scottish. And
yeah,
I put that in. But Gialach is a Gaelic word. It means moon in Scottish Gaelic.
Ooh, okay.
So Yeah, some of them are actual Gaelic words and some of mm-hmm. them are just like inspired by.
Oh, that's very exciting. So, and you had mentioned Amira's ancestors on, because we were sleuthing, on your social media, you yes. had mentioned a possible backstory for her ancestors. Scale of 1 to 10, how serious were you on that? On maybe writing 10. Something like that? Okay, 10. Yes, perfect. Oh, 10. That's what I wanted to hear.
I mean, I don't know if my publisher wants it, but I'm going to write it.
Like, yes. We support it.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of everything's planned in my head as much mm-hmm. as I plan, which is not very much. Like, I have Word documents with like vague inclinations of plans, you know, for all of the duologies. So there's 5 planned duologies. So mm-hmm. I know where we're going. I know who the characters are going to be. I know what their stories are. I know their personalities. And the same kind of goes for Amira's ancestors. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Like, I was writing out the family tree and I decided to go super in detail, like, birthdays, death days, who they were bonded to, their brothers, their sisters, if they got married or not, like mm-hmm. their sexual orientations, like what they got up to in their lives. And it was just really, it was like kind of like playing The Sims. Like, it was just, let me just make up this, like, this is what they did. And it was really fun. So yeah, I knew that writing about the warrior queen Lysandria, who is mentioned in book 1, Emira, you know, feels a very strong connection to her ancestor. She was the queen mm-hmm. who ended the 50-year war. Like, she was responsible for bringing peace back to Erisocia.
Right.
So she really looks up to her and she idolizes her in a way and compares herself to her a lot. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see a little bit more of that in book 2. So while I was writing Emira, even though this other woman lived 200 years prior, there's a very, very big connection there. Mm-hmm. Even though I don't think they're anything particularly alike because their lives were very different, I think it would be really interesting to write about Erisocia when the matriarchy was at its peak mm-hmm. And the yeah. true religion, not that it didn't exist, but that the true religion, you know, wasn't as rife as it is now. Mm-hmm. And then also to see the dragons, like, in their yeah. like full power mm-hmm. and then also potentially glimpses into that war and seeing like what that did to the territory and what it did to the royal family and ultimately the dragons. So I think it's a really interesting point of time in my completely made up world mm-hmm. that I would love to explore.
Do you think that, or you maybe already know the answer to this, on the duologies, will it always be like the FMC and then the MMC kind of side? Or like, where I'm getting at with this, and I feel like I'm gonna regret if I don't ask you this, is there an Adarian novella somewhere in your Word documents waiting for us to show up?
No, there is not. I have a lot of plans. I don't have plans to write a novella about Adarian. However, I have said that each duology is going to be a completely new cast of characters, but there mm-hmm. is an overarching plot line that's going to link them all together.
Okay.
Adarian is not bonded.
Nope, he's not.
Which means he can travel.
He can leave. Yes. He can go other places.
That's the only thing I'm going to say.
Okay.
Thank you for giving Dallas hope.
I mean, I love that everyone loves Adarian.
Love him. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like turning the page, like, he's amazing. He's great. And then I was like, no, where'd he go? And then he came back to the end and I was like, oh, okay, I'm glad he's back. Thank goodness.
Have you seen the artwork of him that I had commissioned?
No, I don't think. I think I've only seen the one of Amira and Fjorian.
Oh, I'll need to find it. Is it? I don't yes. think it's in. It's in the French version of the book. They like put it in the book.
Okay,
I'll send it to you guys after this.
Yes,
so you can see.
I want to see because you described him so well, like in the forge, his muscles, and he loves the matriarchy. He supports his sister. Mm-hmm. He is such a good brother. Yes,
I had someone comment on that and ask if Adarian at any point was like going to kind of challenge Emira, and I explained, I was like, he is such an important character for mm-hmm. the matriarchy because yeah. he showcases that this is completely what he believes in, mm-hmm. you know, there's no question in his mind that Emira is the right person to rule, not only because she's a woman, but because she's better suited to it. Like, he doesn't want it. He's like, I have no interest in ruling. Like, that's her thing.
He's just hanging out.
And even to some extent, I would say also, again, minor spoiler, guys, Draven, their father, he's so power hungry.
He sure is.
Morally black. But he never seeks to take the throne for himself the minute he has a daughter. So the minute he has a female child, he's like, well, she is, technically she's kind of the key to him getting power,
right.
But he's still like, no, this is hers. This is her right. Because he believes in the goddesses so much.
Yeah.
So they are two very different characters, Draven and Adarion. They're nothing alike, but they're so integral for highlighting how the matriarchy is and like that different side of the coin compared to those who support the patriarchy through either the corrupt kings or the true religion.
Wow. Amazing. And we had went back and forth about Draven a couple times, like in our first episode, about like, is he a good dad? Is he not a good dad? Like, ooh,
oh, he's a terrible dad.
Because we were like, he's just making all these bad choices.
He's terrible, like, but you know, who doesn't love a hot dad?
Fair. You're right. We all do.
He's one of my favorite characters. He's very complex. I like to imagine him as Lee Pace's Thranduil, but with red hair instead of white. Which, you know, just helps with being like, oh yeah, he's a dick, but he's hot. So
but it's fine.
But yeah, we're gonna get a lot more kind of under Draven's skin in book two. We're gonna understand him a little bit more.
Oh, like a semi redemption arc ish,
potentially.
Okay, all right. I love that. I don't love him right now. I know you wrote it as if I'm supposed to hate him. I do.
My mom maybe is like number one Draven hater. Like, she is leading that club.
Yeah, we follow her.
I think that's like the parent response. You're like, but your kid, like, that's your child.
No.
Yeah.
Oh man, that'll be so, I'm excited to read that. I'm excited to see where his story goes. So speaking of book two, can you describe it in one sentence? And the name of book two, A Queen Crowned in Flames, is the official title that has been released yet. One sentence to describe this end of this first duology.
I hate questions like this. You're putting me on the spot. This is like when someone asks you what's your favorite book and then you promptly forget every book you've ever read. Like, I've just written all of duology too. Like, that's where my brain is. I can't even remember what happens
in book. If you want to do like a longer, you can do multiple sentences. If you like just kind of the vibe of it.
Epic.
Okay, yes.
Perfect.
I love epic, that. It's epic.
Unexpected. I would say, yes.
And you know, I feel like that's very fitting because if you did finish book one for our listeners, hopefully you finished it and you listened to all the episodes that we have and all the things, that ending got me. I was like, hold on. That's not, no, that's not how books are supposed to, right? Because you anticipate, because you read, when we read fantasy, we anticipate these endings and the enemies to lovers thing. And then, I guess, spoiler alert, again, if you haven't read it, and then we go back to being somewhat enemies with like a hint of maybe not. So I am nervous to see what you are going to do to us in book two.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot of things about a lot of people.
Okay. And then another question I had for book two as well. Do you think you will be sending out any arcs for this one? Do listeners or readers have maybe the opportunity to sign up for that sometime in the future? Or is that something that we're foregoing?
As far as I'm aware, yes. I think obviously my publishers deal with that. I don't deal with any arc requests myself. So on the UK side, if they're coming out, it'll be after Christmas roundabout.
Yeah.
And I know the US, my publisher, they send it out to their like influencer list. And I believe sometimes they open it periodically. I think it's called the Delegates because I'm with Dell.
Their
handle is at Dell Romance. So if you want to be in with a chance, sign up there.
At Dell Romance.
Yes. But as far as I'm aware, yes, there will be arcs going out after Christmas-ish. But that's with a question mark. I don't know yet. I know we're doing I know we're doing arcs, but I just don't know. I'm sure it'll be on NetGalley as well. For e-arcs too.
Oh yeah, and then for like our readers and listeners, if you have never done an arc, like it's called an advanced reader copy.
Yes.
Where you can sign up to maybe get your hands on either a virtual copy, or if you I think have enough followers, you get maybe like a physical copy, and you can read that before the book is published, and then you can go on and leave a review on that book for the author. That way the book can get some momentum before it is published. So NetGalley is a website that you can go to, and you can it's free to create an account. You just sign up, and then the more things you sign up for to read and the more reviews that you leave, the better your score is, and then the better opportunity you have to receive more ARCs or advanced reader copies. So it's very fun. And you can, there's a million books on there. There's so many books on there, and you never, some of them are like ready to just grab. Some of them you submit like your chance to get one. And then sometimes you get a little notification that you got in, which is super exciting. Amazing. That is awesome. And then for book two, the cover, is it complete?
Are you still working on it? I haven't seen anything. Okay. I haven't seen anything. I know that the same designer is doing the cover for book two, who did the cover for book one. So I'm very happy about that because she did a fantastic job. But aside from that, I know nothing.
Oh, that's very exciting. Okay. All right. Yeah. The first cover is absolutely stunning. And then all of the special editions are also beautiful. So no matter what copy you get, you're going to get a beautiful copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Page and Wick special edition. I mean, the Goldsboro one's gorgeous too, but the Page and Wick, they went in such a different direction from everything else. So the cover is like completely different. The edges are completely different. The end papers are stunning. I know they do have limited stock at the time we're recording this, but there might still be a few copies left that are up for grabs by the time this episode goes out. So
yes, if, go get your copy if you don't have it. They're all absolutely beautiful. I think Alyssa's goal is to collect one of every single one of them.
I know, she's collecting them like infinity stones.
I ended up audiobooking this just because I again, the wording, like I wanted to make sure I got everything correct. So this cute copy right here is actually Alyssa's. Thank you for letting me borrow it so I could look in the pages. So I will be, I need to get my physical copy because I have the audiobook. So I need to go figure out which one I want to get.
Yeah.
So one more thing I want to talk about, and this is if for our listeners who have listened to us before, you guys know that bonus chapters are my jam. We read the book, we finished the book. And there was a bonus chapter that was sent via email that I'm not good with technology. I missed it completely. So we had questions in our episode that were answered in that bonus chapter. So are there any bonus chapters coming our way before book two is out, do you think?
So the bonus chapter came about. We were discussing things for paperback. The paperback isn't coming out until next year, I don't think. But I suggested, because I had a couple of bonus chapters written, some were things that had been taken out of the manuscript just for like word count, and some were brand new. And I had asked my editors, hey, do you want to put this in the paperback? Like, is this something that you would consider? And they said no, because they're going to include a sneak peek of book two in the paperback instead.
Yeah.
And then I asked, okay, well, I have this just sitting on my laptop. Can I do something with it, or do I need to like keep this buried? And they said, yeah, you can send it to your mailing list. I am working on getting it up on my website permanently, just so that people who have missed that drop can read it whenever they want. Again, I'm also not the best with technology, so I'm like figuring out how that's going to work and look. But yes, it will be going up. I don't think there are any other bonus chapters planned. But I have so much lore and so much content about this world, so never say never.
Oh, okay. All right. I love that answer. Yeah, and that was going to be another question was, is there opportunities for your readers and for our listeners to get their hands on that bonus chapter? Because I think it is a very important chapter. I think it answers a lot of questions that we originally had after reading the book. So yes, we'll keep that. We'll keep a look on her website when that's posted, and then sign up for her newsletter as well. Very exciting. Amazing. Well, that was all the tough questions I had. So now we have, I didn't tell you this in the email, but here we are. We created some rapid fire ones for you. They're easy. They're fun. Nothing too crazy. So I'm going to throw the question at you. You just answer the first one that you can think of. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Question number one, Adarian or Fiorian? No context, just names.
I was going to say, I was like, can I have some context?
No context, just names.
a Fjorian.
Well, okay. All right. Besides firepower, are you choosing, like, you can choose one. It can't be fire. You have air, water, or earth. Which power would you choose?
Water.
Oh, all right. Well, I didn't expect that. Exciting. Okay. I love that. This one might be a tough one. You have to be in the same room as one for an entire day. Are you choosing Adair, Alfred, or Ser Nairn?
Neither. I refuse.
She's like, I'm out.
I refuse. No, no.
Just kick putting them your both arms out in the doorway.
Yeah, I'm not entering that room. I am not entering that room. No way. Nope.
Oh, good answer. I love it. In the modern world, right? Like, Amira is in the modern world. What animal does she have?
Oh my god. Oh no. I feel like she's not a dog person.
Mm-hmm.
Not a horse person.
Definitely not a horse person. I would say like a really angry cat. That Ooh, okay. is like one of those one, yeah like one of those cats that like hates men and you have to be like yeah. sorry guys, like come in. You can't come to my house because my cat yeah. doesn't like men.
What color is the cat? Like a big orange cat maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I think like a really it big orange cat.
Big
yeah.
orange angry cat.
Yeah, for sure. That's yeah, like only that's only not nice to her. Yeah.
Yes, hands down best answer. And then this is the final one. If you were going somewhere on vacation in Air Scotia, again, if I pronounce that wrong, I'm so sorry. Where would you go and why? You have one place to choose to vacation.
Oh my God.
This question's from Austin, by the way.
It is from Austin.
Of course it's from Austin.
He likes to put one in our interviews.
Him. Love him. Probably, like, I don't want to spoil too much from, like, other geologies because there is one place where I'd be like, oh, I'd love to go there because it's like so magical, but it would be a bit of a spoiler if I said something about it. But from the places that you guys have already read about, I mm-hmm. would probably say the Sunset Isle, because it's where the dragons originated.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very magical. So you'd be able to see like the firebird colonies and the salamander lagoon, and it's beautiful because you have the huge mountain. So yeah, I think, and also the castle there is inspired by my favorite castle in Scotland, which is the Aileen Donnan Castle. Yeah, I think I'd go there.
I love that. You had me at Salamander Lagoon. What a fun concept.
People love the salamanders. Like, I've had a few questions of being like, oh, are they like going to come back and like, mm-hmm. spy on people in book two? And I was like, no, that was just like a fun lore drop, but I love that you guys are like really like latching on to that.
They're here for it. We're here for the Dainia amphibians. Yeah. Oh my gosh, how fun. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And for our Fate, Fortune, Fire fans, both episodes of our coverage on this series will be out now. You can find them anywhere you stream your podcast, and our first episode for our deep dive of Crescent City starts tomorrow. Hazel, would you like to say anything to your listeners before we sign off?
Honestly, just thank you. Like, I owe so much of the success of this book to people like you guys, like talking about it, sharing about it, reading it. Like, it genuinely blows my mind that so many people know about this book and care about it, because I feel like you sit for like 18 months writing it by yourself, and now mm-hmm. suddenly people know about these characters in this world, and it's been amazing. So thank you guys for inviting me on to chat about it. And yeah, thanks to everyone who's been listening.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, thank you so much. You put a wonderful story into words, and thank you for sharing it with us and giving it to us. And we cannot wait for the other books to come out. So we will keep eyes on your social media for any sort of crumbs that you will give us.
Definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys again. Thank you for watching and listening to The Goodish Girls. We'll see you later. Thanks for listening to our interview with Hazel McBride. If you read this book but want to listen to it along with some other amazing audiobooks, we want to gift you 1 month of Audible for free. A link is dropped in our show notes to go check it out.